CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island you got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii, Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to Composite Two-Star Recruits, a USC recruiting podcast where a couple of one-star hosts talk about 5, 4, and 3-star prospects and everything in between. I am your one-star host, Chris Trevino. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host and my podcasting partner in crime, Gerard Martinez. You might know him as G-Mart. Some of you might know him as Gerald. Some of you might know him as Hurricane. Gerard, there was a lot of hurricane going on in Southern California this morning. But how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, the thunderstorms were popping off. In the IE, we had like a fireworks show almost going on for a solid hour. So that was a little surprising. Wasn't really thinking that was going to be in the forecast this morning. But yeah, we got a little taste of Norman, Oklahoma here in Southern California.
Do you think it's a coincidence that we were filming or recording probably our most anticipated Composite Two-Star Recruits podcast of this season, that the day that happens, we got some hurricane and some thunderstorms going? Do you think that's a coincidence?
No, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it's actually divine signs that USC is going to sign every player that visited. No. It was just coincidence. Had nothing to do with anything. It's humid. It's kind of weird, but it's nice. It's been a long time since it's rained in Southern California, so that was actually probably nice just to get a little bit of that cleansing from Mother Nature.
You ready for that? Boom! Hurricane.
Sorry, I had to. I couldn't resist. I could not resist. We have a lot of things to talk about, mainly our recap of USC's historic, jam-packed visitor weekend over this last weekend. We do have a couple of commits to talk about, and that's going to be our cold open. But Gerard, just right at the top of the show, any predictions? Will we get a fight on emoji, and will anyone commit during the show?
Oh gosh, I hope not. We have to hit it just right, like we did the other week with Grant Buckey, where you went on a tear about the overtime tournament and allowed me to get the story up. I don't know if we'll have that. That was a perfect alignment of things happening where we just continued the show. We didn't have to stop anything, and I was able to just get this story up, and we just kept going on. But we did already have a commitment today. And when I say we, I mean USC. So not expecting another one later today, but there is that possibility. There is another fish out there that could decide to latch onto that lure and come out of the water.
Absolutely. And I was a little worried that perhaps Cade Eldridge, three-star jumbo athlete out of Lindale, Washington, that he was going to commit during our show, but decided to go a little bit earlier in the afternoon. So let's just start with him, Gerard. 6'5", 6'4", 240 pounds, plays out of Linden Christian School out there in Washington. We talked a little bit about him last week in terms of our crystal ball stock market and how, you know, USC was the trending school for him going into his visit. And then there was a flip pick or a new pick for him going to the Ducks. And we kind of talked about, we reacted to that. But USC decided, or Brandon Huffman decided, to double down on his USC pick and even bumped up that confidence. And then here he goes and he pops on his commitment today for USC on Wednesday, the 11th commit of the class. He is rated the number 533 overall player, number 38 athlete, number 7 prospect out of Washington, the number 37 athlete in our rankings, a consensus 3-star prospect. Chose USC over Oregon, Washington, Boise State, California. I believe he also had a Michigan offer. So a nice little list there, a little West Coast list. He is listed as an athlete, but he can do a lot of things, play defensive end, play tight end, play halfback, a little running back. And he's being recruited as a tight end for this offense and kind of that H-back role. Gerard, what have you seen from this guy? What have you seen from on tape? Because everyone wants to know.
Can he play?
Yeah, he can play at 6'4", 235. He's a running back for Linden Christian. And he's playing small ball competition. It's not a lot of Division I guys that he's playing against, but it's nice to see that athleticism. A guy that is that big has those skills to be able to actually be the full-time running back at the school. And so you look at that and you try to transition his skill set to what USC needs from the tight end position. And it's that H-back position that we've talked about. The OU offense used a fullback, quasi H-back, quite often. That was a focal point for them in the run game. And it was a guy that got a lot of little kind of like dinky dunk passes that ended up being really big for them on some third downs. And so you look at Cade Eldridge, he's a little bigger. A lot of those guys for OU are in that 6'1", 6'2 range. Cade Eldridge is like 6'3", 6'4". But he has that ability in terms of once he gets the ball in his hands, he knows how to run. He knows what to do with it. And I think that's really big. And I think he's got good hands in the size and everything that you have with it. I think that's a perfect fit. We talked about him last week where we had this sort of strange occurrence where after the official visit, the vibe was that LA was a little too big. It didn't fit him personality-wise. And I think everybody understands that. I think just reading the message boards and listening what Trojan fans had to say about the crystal ball pick going to Oregon, it was understandable. Like, hey, listen, you know what? LA isn't for anybody, everybody. And if you go to a smaller school in a smaller town, you know, you can understand where just the pace of life and the lifestyle in LA might be just a little bit too much for you. And everybody kind of came to terms with that. And then all of a sudden we hear, you know, midweek going into the official visit weekend where USC has its big time, you know, four-star Walker Lyons tight end out of Folsom, California, a five-star Deuce Robinson out of Pinnacle High School in Phoenix, Arizona. And so that's the two, you know, the sort of one and two tight ends on everybody's board on the West Coast. But as we talked about last week, when we were under the impression that Cade Eldridge was probably going to go to Oregon, their plan A, if you will, was they want Deuce Robinson and they want Walker Lyons, but they also need Cade Eldridge because both Robinson and Walker might end up not being on that team in 2023 or beyond, because we know Deuce Robinson is a very good baseball prospect and there's potential that he could end up being drafted by the MLB and going minor league. And so you wouldn't have him. And then with Walker Lyons, he's going to go on a Mormon mission January of next year and won't be back until at least 2024. So, you know, you have your top two guys there, but you realize that those top two guys are maybe not going to be available right away, but Cade Eldridge is. And again, Cade Eldridge comes in at a slightly different position. It's not necessarily the traditional Y that you would line up and put on the line of scrimmage or split wide. He's a guy that can actually play a little H-back because he's comfortable playing running back. He's comfortable in that mold of being in the offensive backfield. So as a blocker and as just in terms of his vision and his skill set, he fits really well there. So it's a great pickup. It's a fit pickup. It's definitely one of those when we talk about brick and mortar and that sort of philosophy of building a team. He's a mortar guy, and he's a guy that you got to have when you win championships. And everybody's going to focus on Deuce Robinson if he's going to focus on Walker Lyons, because, you know, those are the guys that are the big time pass catchers. But, you know, Cade Eldridge ends up being, you know, maybe just as important and a guy that ends up getting just as many snaps.
Recorded 794 total yards and 11 touchdowns in 10 games last season on offense, and on defense recorded 15 tackles for a loss, 62.5 total tackles, 4.5 sacks, and 2 forced fumbles as a defensive end. Do you think he saw that clip of Lincoln Riley's speech at Crypto Stadium or whatever, that you want to be on the rocket ship? Do you think he heard that and was like, I got to get on this rocket ship?
No, because we heard that the tide was already turning for him. I do think that there was a conversation that happened between him and Lincoln Riley, and I think Lincoln Riley really closed it. I think he closed the deal. I think that he started to rethink things and go, gosh, Oregon is closer to home. Oregon is more sort of my pace. Eugene is more my pace of life. And I think Lincoln got on the phone and said, listen, I'm from Muleshoe, Texas. You know, the coaches on this staff, or a lot of these guys, are from smaller towns. And he probably, and I know, I mean, in the write-up that Brandon Huffman has on the site, Kate Eldridge talked about getting out of your comfort zone and sort of challenging yourself and doing different things. And so I think that conversation really hit home with him. And I know it's hit home with some other recruits that he's spoken to that were on the official visits last weekend as well. And so that's an interesting dynamic. And that is something that Lincoln Riley has in his back pocket. He's a small town guy. And now he's in LA. It's a big difference between being a small town guy and being in Norman. It's like, okay, yeah, you know, I mean, Norman is obviously bigger than Muleshoe, Texas, but it's not LA. And so, you know, Lincoln Riley's practicing what he preaches. And that's a big deal. When you're able to back up what mm-hmm. you say with what you do, I think that just, it hits home a lot more for recruits and their families when you're actually doing the things that you're talking about. And some coaches don't. Some coaches have a lot of rhetoric and they have a lot of salesmanship, but they're not necessarily doing what they're saying. And so from that standpoint, I think it connected well with Kate Eldridge. And I think there was just a point in time where he says, you know what, screw it. I like USC the most. That's where I really want to be. I can't be scared off by living in a different place, in a different environment. I need to embrace that. And I think that's why he ended up committing.
Reminds me of a young kid who came out here almost 10 years ago from the DMV.
Yeah, the DMV. That's real slow paced, the DMV. Real small town there.
Yeah, so really good pickup for the class. And as we mentioned, we don't really talk about the tight end class being a critical need for 2023, but it actually is, just because, you know, USC has Ethan Ray, who has, you know, had the knee issues. They have two older guys in a Josh Follow and Malcolm Epps, who will be probably moving on after the season. You lost Michael Trigg through the transfer portal. So right now, your really only two young guys are Jude Wolf and then Lake McCree entering his redshirt freshman season. So they need some bodies in that room to be able to do what Lincoln wants to do with that tight end position and that H-back spot. And, you know, there's a possibility they do sign all three of those guys, Cade, Deuce, and Walker, depending on how baseball works out. And regardless of, you know, Walker taking that mission, he's going to sign somewhere, and, you know, we would still probably feel really comfortable with USC being in that top two. We're going to talk about that when we get into the full breakdown. Before we move on to USC's other commitment, does Cade remind you of anyone that you've seen play or anyone jump out to you, a comparison?
I mean, you know, just on film, you're seeing a little bit of what we saw from Carson Tabarachi, who we at the P.
No, you got to say it right.
We at the P, we know him as Carson Tabarucci. Yeah. And Carson played a similar role in high school. Now, Carson's going to play on the defensive side of the ball for USC as he just transferred in from Utah. But on film, he did a lot of those things where he's a guy that's 6'1", 6'2", and he's playing running back, and he's a dynamic running back. He does some really good things at running back, and a lot of Trojan fans that watch this film are like, hey, can we get this guy a running back? He's got a little bit of Vi Malapai to him. And again, we started to talk about the evolution of the offense, sort of transitioning away from what Graham Harrell had done and as to what to Lincoln Riley does and like to do at Oklahoma. And you're trying to fit pieces into the puzzle, and you're looking for that H-back. You know, you're looking for that guy that you're going to bring in motion. You're going to bring in some wham blocking. You're going to bring in some mic blocks just straight up the middle. And USC does not have that, or did not have that, in Graham Harrell's offense. In terms of run game, it was very much side to side, sort of trying to open up holes by just sort of gap discipline. And there's a little bit more G block, and I don't want to say it's G block, but it's a little more straightforward. We got to get a hat on a hat and get north and south with Lincoln Riley's run game. And I think the tight end position, what we're going to see is it's going to transition to be a little more traditional and a little less of the hybrid, is Drake London a tight end or a receiver type of offense. You know, there was a lot of that went on with, you know, was Drake London a receiver or a tight end? They have another tight end there in Eric Cromenhoek. But are you using 11 personnel, or are we looking at Drake London now as a receiver, or is he still a tight end? And I think going forward, you're just going to see more of a traditional tight end used, and you're going to see receivers used. So there's going to be a little more definition there. I think how they're used is going to be a little more well-defined. And so you're not going to probably see that sort of blurred overlap line, which, you know, I can understand why from a schematic standpoint that works. You know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But obviously for Lincoln Riley, it works better to have those guys in line and to use some type of H-back in the run game, which we know did not work for USC in the past.
Okay, Hurricane, let's move on to the second commitment. We got a big boy in here. We got a trench guy. We got a trench god in Amos Talalele, who committed, I believe, like 24 hours after his official visit this weekend. An interesting recruitment. Obviously, he was a Cal commit when he took the visit this weekend. There's a lot of questions are, well, he was slated to come for this weekend. He committed to Cal early in June after his Cal official visit. So was he still going to make the trip out, or was he going to be like similar to Elijah Page, who committed to Notre Dame, ended up not making it out this weekend for his official visit? So what was going to be the deal with Amos? Ended up getting him on campus and just crushed it, obviously. They got the flip. He decommitted from Cal and then made the jump to the Trojans, 6'5", 330 pounds, a consensus three-star recruit, rated number 517 nationally, the number 61 defensive lineman, but he is slated to play offensive lineman for the Trojans, number 66 defensive lineman for the 24/7 sports rankings. He was committed to Cal as a defensive lineman, but here Josh Henson wants him for the offensive line. He seems to love to pull. He loves to hit people. And Gerard, he's got a really fun tape. And for any fans listening, I would recommend watching his tape. I do not know what the competition like is at Santa Clara High School and sort of that competition, that division. It doesn't look like it's the highest, but you see what you want to see on tape when you have a guy this size going against, you know, guys who are much smaller than him. He's just a wrecking ball out there. He is laying dudes out left and right. He's got good eyes in the backfield, and he's just crushing dudes at 330 pounds, which is what you want to see for these lineman highlights. Gerard, I figured you like this pickup because you've mentioned him several times as you got to go find those bodies. And Sean Nua went ahead and found this body for the offensive line.
Yeah, I credit to Sean Nua of getting him on campus after that Cal commitment. You know, you kind of felt like he committed to Cal. And it was kind of like, you know, marrying the first girl he kissed. And yeah, you know, Cal did a good job of selling him on playing nose tackle. And that's really where he kind of wants to play. You know, he wants to play defensive line. He's always looked at himself as a defensive lineman, and they've kind of got a perfect setup for him. I mean, that's a very good defense where you actually use the nose tackle in a 3-4, and they play a lot of two gap with that defense. So he tends to be a guy that, you know, profile wise, a bit of a body catcher as a defensive lineman, takes up a lot of space, not necessarily a guy that's going to be a huge pass rusher for you, but that's not how the Cal defense is really set up. And so when you transition over to USC, yeah, USC looking at him more as an offensive lineman. We haven't been able to talk to him post-visit to kind of gain an idea as to what their vision is with him specifically at this point, but he was taking all those pictures with the offensive line group, and you kind of got the sense that, you know, he was probably going to be with the offensive line group. He was also wearing number 5, though, so we take that with a grain of salt. We don't think Reggie Bush's number 5 is coming out of retirement.
You never know. You never know.
But in terms of him as a big body, yes, like you said, he's a guy that is, you know, 6'5", 330. Probably not that big, though, because we see him next to Francis Maiagoa, and he's not quite as big as Francis. So I think he's probably closer to being more of a 6'3", 6'4". But he carries that weight well, and he's very athletic. He's got very nimble feet, and I think he's a good interior offensive lineman for USC. Potentially, maybe he loses a little weight. He does have athleticism, so it's possible he could play offensive tackle as well. We're just going to kind of see. He's a lineman. He's a big body, and you know, I don't mind over-recruiting those guys. I know that's sort of a little taboo for some coaches. They don't like to over-recruit interior offensive linemen specifically. And we talked about this in the past. It's just you can't necessarily move those guys anywhere, you know. But I think, you know, ultimately for your team to have good interior linemen is big just from a scout team standpoint. And over the course of time, developing those guys and have them ready by their junior, senior years, that's not such a bad thing, you know, and it's going to be harder and harder with the transfer portal these days to have 4-star and 5-star guys sitting on your bench. So you're going to have to recruit some guys that are going to be 3-star guys and develop those guys over time and hope that, you know, their egos and what have you don't get the best of them and they transfer anyways. So I think this is a great pickup for USC. And, you know, I could see him potentially, you know, even maybe getting a look at the defensive line as well. I don't think the defense quite fits him. I think that you want a quicker upfield, one gap type pass rushers and Alex Grinch's defense. I think that's a big difference between the defense that USC has and what Cal has been doing and what Cal did even in previous years and what Justin Wilcox did at USC. We've seen that defense up close. I you know, we know what Justin Wilcox defense is about and what they do. And I didn't think it was a very good fit for USC, to be honest with you. I didn't think that a two gap defense at USC was what you wanted with the athletes that you're able to recruit. You're able to recruit athletes that can get upfield, that can be pass rushers, that can be disruptive in the defensive backfield. And you want your linebackers really finishing up plays more than you want them to be the guys that are filling the gaps and what have you. So it's a different philosophy. It's a different scheme that USC has now. And you're going to see more speed from the linebackers because you want them to clean up those plays and you want the defensive line to be just disruptive. You know, you want them to be able to go and make plays in the offensive backfield. But if they don't actually make the tackle, that's where your linebackers swoop in and finish off the play. So I think with Talele, definitely his profile and his attributes and his abilities, I do think he fits better on the offensive line for USC.
And before Cade had popped on his commitment today, Talele had been the third consecutive lineman that USC had picked up following Grant Buckey on the defensive side. And then Tobias Raymond, who got things going for this month. That's three consecutive offensive linemen, that they had picked up. And, you know, this has been a very popular talking point on the P over the last several months and then going into this month is where's the beef? And Gerard, we finally have some beef. You got three big guys right now for the class. You can kind of build the foundation. And I know I've gotten a lot of questions about this on social media, and I talked about it on the Parasol podcast with Ryan in terms of, oh, these guys are only three stars. When are the four and five stars coming? Well, I've mentioned this several times. The four and five star offensive linemen, those blue chip guys, they take a little bit longer with their process. They've got every offer under the sun to consider. They're going to usually take all their visits because top-end offensive linemen are at a premium, so those guys take a little bit longer on the process. They want to hear every offer on the table. They get those free trips out of the way. And Gerard, you mentioned this several times. These are your mortar guys, and they help build the foundation of a class, especially large lineman classes when you have to bring in multiple guys to help fill out the depth in the ranks.
Yeah, certainly. I realize, yeah, people are waiting for the big five stars to make their move and they will. You know, some of these guys are going to commit over the summer and we're going to have to see how that all shakes out, but you definitely have to build a bit of a foundation for the class. You have to find those specialty players along with the guys that you feel are just going to be good players for you that are going to contribute. Not every guy is going to be all conference. Not every guy is going to be an All-American in the first round pick. You do have to have some of those really good players that come in and are just good team players. And I think, you know, USC is definitely doing a little bit of both. This big weekend where you have 20-odd guys come in, we talked about it last week, is sort of a team within a team. You know, this was a weekend where they wanted to use the momentum of other recruitments to maybe influence the recruitments of players that were a little more on the fence and sort of get everybody caught up in the wave, if you will, the golden hour. And so I think they did a good job of that. And, you know, Brandon Huffman made an interesting point on the Best of the West podcast with Blair Angulo earlier in the week, where they were talking about the big visit and what USC was trying to do. And he was talking a little bit about, you know, you have these recruits that are on campus and they're looking around and they're seeing all these top guys and they're having such a good time. And it sort of puts pressure on some of those guys that are the three stars and maybe the low four stars that see these five star guys having such a good time. And they're like, man, these guys are about to jump on this train and this train is moving kind of fast. I need to commit now. And it creates a sense of urgency with some of those guys that, you know, maybe are a little more on the fence you want to get committed now and get it done and move on. And so I think, you know, to some extent, it does create that. I also think that there is that momentum that's built when you get guys together. And, you know, we saw that with the offensive line crew where they're really trying to work hard on Francis Malagoa, the five-star at IMG. Lived out here in San Bernardino for a while, originally from Samoa. And, you know, they tried to surround him with some polys and some guys that he could connect with. And those guys all had a great time. I mean, Amos Talalele, obviously he's already committed. We think that Alani Noah from Sacramento Grant High School is probably in line to also commit to USC. Michael Benuelos is another guy that had a really good time at USC, a guy that was sort of out there a little bit, but I think USC ruled him in, and he's going to take that official visit to Oregon this weekend and then probably make a decision, and people feel like it's between Oregon and USC. So, yeah, there's definitely some of that momentum that they're trying to build with some of these players as well. And you got to start, you know, somewhere. And, they started with the five stars. It kind of was a little backwards where they started with Malachi Nelson and Makai Lemon and Zachary Branch. I mean, you had three five stars commit right out of the gates, first ones in the class. And so now you're sort of kind of getting back into filling out the class a little bit more as you get out of summer. But there's going to be some guys that are out there that are still going to be the guys that get them to that top five, top three class. And they're going to be out there, and they're probably going to make decisions here in July and maybe August.
Speaking of being out there, that's a good transition to Emoji Watch, Gerard's favorite part of the show. There are officially five emojis that went out this week. I believe three were on Sunday when visits were basically wrapping up after the weekend, which got everyone excited. I think there was one later that day, or it came in Monday. And then there was one that came out yesterday evening, I believe. So five there. You have two that are accounted for in Amos Talalele. And then I butchered that. Talalele. Sorry, let's have a little more. Let's have a little crisper. Let's have a little crisper. This is a high-end podcast now. We can't be sloppy. So Amos Talalele and then Cade Eldridge today. So there's three unaccounted for emojis, Gerard. I know you wanted us to kind of maybe take some guesses or give our best estimation as to who those remaining three are.
I wanted the fans.
You mentioned it. You brought it up, my man.
I'm usually not real big on who's the next commit. Who's the next commit? You know, 20 years doing this. It'll be 20 years next January. So
wow.
I've been saying 20 years for the last like 3 years, because just rounding up, but it's actually going to be 20 years next January. So I think in all that time, if there's one thing that has not increased, is the interest in who's going to commit next, because it just is going to happen. You know, eventually the next commit will come, it'll be that guy. And then we see who he is and how he impacts the team as we currently see it, and the class as we currently see it. But in terms of those emojis, there's some guys out there that I think are definitely feeling USC a lot. And I could see potentially making, some nods and some winks probably over the weekend. I mean, if I had to guess, I think Walker Lyons is probably part of that group. We already talked about Alani Noah and probably Trey Wilson, I think, would be another guy that is a potential guy. We'll talk about that, I guess, as we go through all the visitors mm-hmm. that were on campus and maybe, you know, why we think that. But, I think there's going to be more than that as well. I think that you're going to see a consistent flow of emojis coming out of the official site and from Lincoln Riley over the next couple weeks, over the next few weeks, probably. And, obviously the fan base is hoping it leads up to some big commitments from guys like Mateo Ungulale and Francis Malagoa.
Gerard, if you accept the position as my lead recruiting personnel guy at Trevino Tech, we would put out crab emojis every time there's a commitment. What do you think about that?
I think that's a bad idea, because then you would have a lot of crabs.
Damn, I walked right into that one, didn't I? Well, let's move off from that faux pas of having crabs to what a lot of people are excited to listen to this podcast for, which would be the recap of all the visitors that made it on campus, and the vibes and the feelings and the quotes and the nuggets that we got from just this weekend and what they did and all that kind of stuff, because there was a lot of kids on campus, as we know, and there was a lot of kids and there were even people that didn't make it onto campus. So I think we just kind of want to run through those really quickly who did not end up making it for this week. Offensive tackle Elijah Page, which was probably a duh one because he had committed Notre Dame. And there was talk that he was going to not make his trip out, shut down that recruitment. Malachi Crawford, the local cornerback out of Pacifica, he did not make it out there. I talked with him. His mother was not able to make the trip out for the official visit. She had to go somewhere, and he really wanted his mother to be on the visit. So, you know, that makes sense. He's just going to push it back to in season, which makes sense. He's a local kid, so it's going to be a lot easier for him than if he was in, you know, Texas or Florida or whatever. So that makes sense. Terrence Green, the Texas defensive lineman, he did not make it out on the trip. He actually took an official visit to Texas this weekend. Safety out of St. Louis, Christian Gray, he did not make it out. He's been to campus several times for unofficial visits, but he did not end up making out for the official this weekend or this past weekend. And then Malik Bryant, the IMG edge rusher, there's been talk about him coming out. There was talk about him coming out for a visit, but he ended up going somewhere much nicer in the University of Maryland for his official visit. And Gerard, you sound like you're laughing over there.
No, because people might not know that you went to Maryland, and they're like, "What the hell is
They're already deleting the angry DM they were.
Yeah, they're already
they're backspacing. Like, okay,
two-star rating on the two-star podcast.
Yes, that reminds us. You can give us a five-star rating on Apple. That would really appreciate. I think we have some. I might pull them up later because I forgot to do them at the top of the show. But thank you for those who did leave us podcast reviews. I'll get those read on the show at some point, maybe at the end here if we have enough time. But those are the core guys that did not end up making it on the trip. And as I pointed out with like Malachi and Elijah Page, these guys don't make it out for various reasons. But we don't want to spend too much time on those guys. We want to talk about mainly the guys that did make it out. And last week, we did put them into sort of groups, groupings. We had the commits. We had the lead pack, the guys you want to close with. You had the traction guys, and then you had what we deemed the rest. We left them up there, and then we're kind of going to rearrange them into different groupings or see who moves up or who moves down or what have you. So, Gerard, where do you want to start?
Well, all of the commits made it in that were scheduled to make it in. So that was good. I mean, we kind of took a stab in the dark with Marion Peterson because – he's been a bit of a ghost trying to get a hold of and confirm things with. But we see from proof. We have proof of life. From
He does exist. He does exist.
Yeah, he does exist. And he was at USC and he had what looks to be a great time with his counterpart, Quentin Joyner, who you actually spoke a little bit to Quentin Joyner's dad about that. So I don't know. Did he have anything interesting to say about, you know, spending time with the other running back commit?
Quentin is sort of is not as much of a ghost as Amarion, but he is hard to get a hold of. So Coach Kyle McDonald decided to get two really good running backs who are also very ghost-like, and they do not really do media interviews like that. But I was able to get a hold of Quentin Joyner. You know, had a lot of great things to say about USC. He kind of gave me some insight into why he committed initially. You know, he liked the weather. He felt like the coaching staff, they made him feel like family. And his big thing for this visit, obviously he was a commit going into this visit. He just wanted to feel, you know, welcomed by the current team and kind of build the relationships. He was hosted by Austin Jones. They kind of have similar body types, so that's a good matchup for him to be hosted by. He really enjoyed the bowling aspect. He liked bonding with all the guys. And a big part of that visit was, you know, getting to know Amarion. You know, two Texas kids. He said they hung out mostly the entire weekend. They vibe really well together. So a good bonding for the two future backfield guys. And I guess the other two nuggets of info there is that he is on schedule to be an early enrollee, which is good. And at this time, he is shutting down his recruitment. He does not plan on taking any more visits to any other school. So I think those are two really good pieces of information for USC fans to hear.
Yeah, I mean, out of that group, the only one that I know of that's going to continue to take visits was Zachariah Branch. I don't think any of the other commits had talked about taking official visits to any of their schools. Makai Lemon said he was shutting it down. Malachi Nelson says he's not taking any more visits. Braxton Myers says he's not taking any more visits as of right now. And Braxton Myers has just put a story up on him, talked a little bit about recruiting some of the Texas guys, and it was kind of interesting him talking about his dad actually helping recruit some of the players that were there as well. His dad played at Alabama in 10 years in the NFL as a defensive lineman.
So he knows what he's talking about.
He knows what he's talking about. And so he had some gems of wisdom helping USC recruit last weekend. You could talk a little or read up on that with the story that we just put up. And then, you know, we transitioned into the sort of lead pack, the guys that USC was trying to close with, at least the guys in our estimation, USC was trying to close with. And it was an impressive group because, you know, this is where you had a couple five stars there and a couple of the high four stars. Guys like Francis Malagoa, Mateo Ngulele, Lucas Simmons. I mean, that's three of the really top guys on the list when you're talking about need for linemen. And then obviously you have Deuce Robinson there. And so I don't know. Do you want to go through these guys individually or do you just want to kind of talk about them in general?
Yeah, I mean, we could just run through them individually. I think that's what the people want. The people, the peristyle, the casuals. That's what they want, Gerard.
Whoa. Let's not get the peristyle confused with the filthy casuals now, all right?
I said them as two separate groups.
Yeah, let's make that distinction, okay? All right? We appreciate the casuals listening, all right? We're trying to bring them into the brotherhood here, or sisterhood, or whatever you want to call it. But at the same time, we have to acknowledge the peristyle, the veterans, the people that really care about USC football, right? Okay?
Fair enough.
Listen, all right. So, Francis Malagoa. What do we know about him? We know that he had a really good trip. We know that he's still looking at various schools. One of the things that came up, and you actually reported this in the war room before, and I mean, I don't want to spill too much war room tea here, but you know, Tennessee is maybe a bigger player here than people are giving them credit for. We thought, you know, Alabama may be the lead school for him, but sounds like Tennessee is going to get that last visit, and Tennessee is definitely recruiting him pretty hard. But USC, they did everything they possibly could to recruit Francis Malagoa this weekend and have probably up until this point. And I think that there's not going to be a lot of blind spots in his recruitment. You know, it's going to go how it's going to go. If they're able to land him, they're going to land him. But I don't think with Francis and Mateo Ungulale, you're going to see any sort of Josh Connerly, you know, last minute visits or something that's done by another school where it's like, oh, my gosh, we didn't see that coming. I think with Sean Nua, the primary on both of those players, I think you're going to be at the table and you're going to know exactly what's what, who's offering what. And then it's just going to be a matter of, you know, is USC going to be able to beat that? And so I think with the Francis Malagoa, they're right there. They're toe to toe. And we just kind of have to see. He took his official visit to Miami directly from USC. And this weekend he's going to be at Tennessee. And then at some point in July, he's going to make that decision. So he was probably the biggest fish among some big fish on campus, but he was probably the guy, and USC went all out to recruit him. Lucas Simmons was a little more quiet from what I understand, just a little more reserved. And part of that, I think, is, you know, his mom had just flown in from Sweden. Now, his mom was supposed to fly in from Sweden for the Florida official visit, which happened the week before, but reading the update and talking to Andrew Ivins, who spoke to Lucas after the visit, the first official visit that his mom has ever been on, and the first college visit, period, was at USC.
And that's so huge. That's huge,
but it's also overwhelming. I mean,
right.
That was not a regular, normal official visit. I mean, I think every one of those players we talked to afterwards, the word amazing, I don't think there was one player that didn't say the word amazing probably at least five times in their interview, correct?
Right. It was the theme of every kid that we talked to.
So, you know, his word coming out of the interview was mind-blowing, and it certainly was a lot for his folks to kind of absorb and take in. And I think just, you know, he wanted to hang out with his family probably a lot more than the other kids. The other kids probably wanted to get away from their families because they're around their families all the time. But he had not seen his mom and his dad for a while. And I think that, you know, they wanted to just kind of take everything in and go about it in a very sort of professional way. He really likes USC. Tennessee is a school that's also involved with him as well. And he probably is the most comfortable with Florida State because he's been there the most. And Florida State is going to be his official visit this weekend. So academically, Florida and USC truly are the outliers for him. But it sounds like, you know, Tennessee, Florida State might have done a better job kind of recruiting him. You know, right now, all signs, at least the circumstantial evidence, points to USC being his leader. But we're just going to have to kind of wait and see how that shakes out. And we talked a little bit about Mateo Ungalale. His dad loves USC. He was on the visit before Mateo even got to the visit. And so, you know, they spent a lot of time at USC talking with Sean Nua, going over the various different aspects of the defense. I think with him and some of the other defensive players, for sure, the question mark, and this is probably negative recruiting that's, you know, sort of creeping in here. It's what's the defense going to do? You know, we know everything about Lincoln Riley and the offenses that he had at Oklahoma, but the defenses just were not that good. I've had a couple of recruits sort of low-key off record talk about that a little bit. Their questions about, you know, how is this defense really going to fit me, and how is it at developing NFL talent as opposed to some of these other schools I'm looking at? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's being harped on. Certainly it's being harped on by Oregon, probably being harped on by Alabama as well. It's like, hey, yeah, you know, I understand if you want to go there and you're quarterback, you're a receiver, but why would you want to go there if you're a defensive lineman or linebacker sort of thing? And I think that's what some of these kids are getting from some of these other schools. I'm sure Mateo Ngulele is going to get a lot of that this weekend. He's going to visit Oregon. So we're going to see how, you know, he comes out of that visit as opposed to his Ohio State visits and his USC visits. And I think USC's, again, done everything they can do. And one of those things is stay on top of all the different angles and all the different people involved in his recruitment and making sure that they're not blindsided like they were with Josh Connerly. I just don't think that's going to happen. And that doesn't necessarily guarantee that he's going to go to USC, but I think it just puts them in a better position read-wise. And I think that's very important in the recruiting process.
Well, I think it's just very – and just looking at it also, you know, I know we've talked about this on the podcast before. If we look at it sort of logically, which is obviously something that can get us in trouble when we look at recruiting, but it's pretty hard to beat the Dr. Dre school of, like, music for when it comes to a guy like Mateo, who is an aspiring music producer, you know? Because that's, like, what every photo he was posting was at the Dr. Dre, Jimmy Iovine school. So definitely, I know they were hitting that super hard with him in terms of, you know, being something that's stuck in his mind when he goes to a place like Oregon or Ohio State, when they don't have sort of the facilities like that to compete with the USC in that regard.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think that, you know, one of the main differences between he and his brother, there's a few different differences between two. I think they're different people, and I think they have a different relationship with their family and whether they want to get away from school or stay home from school. But also, I think with DJ, you know, football was the catalyst for everything he wanted to do. Whereas I think Mateo is looking at school
it's a vehicle. More, football's the vehicle.
Yeah, he's a little more well-rounded and probably is those factors outside of football are bigger for him than they were for DJ. So I think that definitely does work well for USC. And I think it also works well, though, that, you know, his position coach, he has a really great relationship with. And while you can say, well, you know, Lincoln Riley's defenses at Oklahoma weren't that good vis-a-vis Alex Grinch's defenses at Oklahoma weren't that good. And I'm not making that statement. That's not me talking. I'm again, talking about some of the things that I think these kids are hearing, judging from, you know, the feedback that I've gotten. I think with Mateo, the fact is Sean Nua is going to be your coach, and Sean Nua was at Michigan. Sean Nua had nothing to do with that. So, you know, I think that it's a tougher sell for schools when it comes to that. You know, when you're talking about other positions, maybe you could sell that. But I think with his relationship with Sean Nua and his family's relationship with Sean Nua, it's going to be tough for other schools to be able to break that down and get around that. And obviously NIL is, you know, the wild card in all this. And that was the wild card with Josh Connerly, not Sean Connerly, not 007, a shaken, not stirred, but Josh Connerly, the offensive lineman, who a lot of people thought was going to USC. I mean, USC, I think, thought he was going to USC up until, you know, he didn't go to USC and he picked Oregon. But there was, you know, some stuff I think that went on there that, they were just not privy to. And I don't think that's going to happen with Mateo Ungulale. So I think with those guys, you know, I think USC is in a very good place. I think they're a very good place with Deuce Robinson, the 6'5", 225 tight end from Phoenix. plays at Pinnacle High School, which is the same high school that Radler went to, whose first name is escaping me, but the quarterback,
Spencer
Radler, yeah, who went to OU and then transferred out after he was beat out by Caleb Williams. I think, you know, got some winks and nods about Deuce Robinson this weekend. But we know Deuce Robinson's probably not going to make any commitments or announce any commitments, I should say, for the next probably month. He sounds like he may even go into the fall. He's, you know, looking at Georgia, looking at Alabama. There's some connection there with Arch Manning. So his recruitment somewhat impacts Deuce Robinson's commitment. If you want to read more on that, we put a War Room special up Monday night, Tuesday morning, which got into the more of the details of all of this with Deuce Robinson when it comes to baseball and it comes to Arch Manning, it comes to some of the other schools. But I think USC right now is the leader by a good margin, and USC did a great job with him. And they also did a great job with his cohort at tight end, Walker Lyons. And as I said, I think Walker Lyons is a guy that we could see an announcement here pretty soon. He's going to most likely take his official visit to Stanford this weekend. He's still waiting on admissions for Stanford. To see if he's actually accepted to Stanford academically. So Stanford's, you know, they're a player in here still, but I think USC just blew him away from what I understand. Checked all the boxes with his family. And he walks into a really good position, because the thing is, we talked about in prior podcasts, for a lot of these top-end recruits, and specifically with the guys from out of state, but, you know, even the guys locally that are top 100-level recruits, there's some faith that has to come along with the turnaround that Lincoln Riley is trying to execute here at USC. You know, they haven't played any games yet. We really don't know how well USC is going to play next season, and how the cultural sort of renovation is going to take place this season. And so a lot of these visits, you know, USC's like, have faith. You know, this rocket ship is going, as Lincoln Riley said, you know, get on before it takes off, because it's going to leave you behind. But that takes a little bit of faith that USC is going to turn this around, and they're going to be able to get back to where I think Trojan fans expect them to be. And that's not winning 9 games. That's not winning 10 games. That's winning 11 and 12 games. That's getting to the college football playoff perennially. And so, you know, there's a little bit of faith that has to come into Lincoln Riley being able to do that before he's done it. Walker Lyons doesn't really have to have faith, because he won't be, you know, enrolling until 2024 at the earliest. And so he can kind of, you know, sit back and go on his mission, and he'll come back and he'll be re-recruitable at that point. If he decides, you know what, it didn't happen for USC like Lincoln Riley said it was. I'm going to go to BYU. I'm going to go to Utah. I'm going to go to Stanford. He could do that. So he's in a pretty good position, I think. And I think USC is in a very good position with him. And so that was kind of last week we talked about the guys that we felt were in the lead pack for USC. We already talked about Alani Noah, thinking he's going to be one of those guys that was an emoji. Then we get into sort of the traction guys, the guys that we knew USC was on the outside looking in, the guys that they were trying to make an impact with, and guys that they may not even get commitments from if they're made during the summer, but still be around, hang around enough that potentially, if those guys commit to other schools, USC is still within striking range of being able to maybe flip a commitment.
Yeah, and that would be Jalen Hale, and obviously the number one linebacker in the country. Anthony Hill, I know a lot of people are you know, wanting to know more about sort of Anthony Hill. And from what we can tell, obviously, just like a lot of these high-end guys, the visit was a big success with them. But Hill is an interesting one, because it always felt like, you know, schools like Texas A&M, Texas, I believe Georgia is one of those schools up there as well, were sort of in that lead pack, and USC was sort of, you know, looking up at those schools and really needed to make a move. And based off his relationships with Lincoln and Alex Grinch, and I believe Brian Odom when they were at Oklahoma, is what really helped get him on campus for this official visit to come. You know, he knows those guys from early in his recruitment. Come see what USC is all about. And as we mentioned with the traction guys, it's about showing USC what it's all about and sort of keeping pace sort of in their mind. So if they don't make a commitment by the end of the summer and their recruitment's dragging on, you know, you have that visit in the back of their mind. You could be like, and if you start winning, you know, if USC goes and wins 10 games, 11 games, goes to the Pac-12 championship, it's much easier to maybe get back in it for Anthony Hill and maybe, you know, wiggle in there to sneak away with him coming off that amazing official visit you had back in June, and you're putting together success on the field. So maybe getting him on campus for an official visit during the season, that all helps when you have such a very successful June official visit. And, you know, as we saw, I tweeted out some of the comments that were under Anthony Hill, and it seems like everyone really had a great time in terms of bonding, because under every prospect's Instagram photos, you know, Caleb Williams is recruiting guys. Damani Jackson is recruiting guys. Zachariah Branch is recruiting guys. All these guys in the commits, Amos, Grant Buckey, Braxton Myers, they're all, you know, having this little shorthand recruit teenager lingo talking to each other. And that just kind of shows how much they all kind of bonded over this weekend together. And Anthony Hill being one of them. I'm sure Zachariah was on there. He mentioned that Anthony was a guy he wanted to recruit. So I think they made up some ground, but I still think it's sort of one of those things where USC still needs to produce on the field to really, really get into the discussion for a guy like Anthony Hill.
Yeah, probably less so for Jalen Hale, just because I think there's less to, you know, find out about the offense. You know, the offense has been prolific, and the expectation is going to continue to be prolific even next year, especially with these transfers that they have. So I think that's an easier sell for him. Granted, from what I understand, Georgia is a big player for him. A&M is still a big player for him. So I don't know that USC has the lead of any sort. With Anthony Hill, yeah, I think his visit started out a little sort of, he was not necessarily comfortable, a little quiet, a little reserved from what I understand. And then by the end of the visit, he really sort of opened up and became more comfortable around the other recruits and started to have a really good time. So yeah, I think there's still definitely work to be done with him. Texas, Oklahoma, A&M, that's sort of like the lead group. And then potentially there, you know, you have Alabama lurking and what have you. And I think, you know, you're going to have to work during the season, and maybe he makes a commitment before then, and then you just have to wait and see. Maybe there's some coaching changes. You know, maybe that team doesn't play well. You just never know during the season how things go. I mean, we know that having covered USC here with all the coaching changes and the turnover over the past few years, that can change a recruitment really quickly. So you just want to hang around. You just want to stay within striking distance, and potentially, you know, that relationship with the coach is enough to get him back on campus. And then, you know, it's you kind of just don't know what's going to happen at that point. So that was the traction group. I think that was accurate. The rest is really the exciting group. You know, the rest of the guys, right, were like, you know, there's some guys here we feel like USC could be in the lead group. And then there's other guys we're just not necessarily sure. We haven't heard much from them. We haven't talked to them directly enough to have a vibe. And so that's a pretty big group. And I think, you know, that's a much smaller group now coming away from the official visit and having talked to some of these prospects and gotten a better vibe for sort of, you know, where USC sits for them. And so I think out of the gates, Trey Wilson, the 6'4", 230-pound defensive end out of Lake Centennial, which is in Garland, just outside of Dallas, he's very high on USC. And I think right now it's USC and Baylor. We had reported earlier in the week that he had canceled his visit to Baylor and Nebraska, but I had talked to him actually after that. And according to him, he's still going to take that Baylor visit. And so we talked a lot just about scheme and sort of where USC saw him. I talked to him just right after the visit briefly, and then talked to him a little more this week. And, you know, he's a guy that USC sees could put his hand on the ground, could end up being like a 5 technique, even maybe a 3 technique if he puts on enough weight. Or if he doesn't, he could be a little bit more of a hybrid. So they were talking about moving him around a lot. And he really likes the defense because it's a shifting, moving, stunting defensive line that USC uses. And they use mobility, and that really connected with him and his game. He had a great conversation with Lincoln Riley even after he came home from the visit and sort of decompressed a bit. But so we'll see if he ends up on campus at Baylor. But I think USC has a pretty good lead right now and is a guy that I could see ending up committing to USC over the next few weeks. Another guy that I talked to after the visit that I really had not spoken with and really didn't have a feel for his recruitment and sort of where his mindset was with schools was Warren Robertson, the safety out of Red Oak, Texas, a guy that is actually being recruited kind of as a cornerback as well for USC. So, you know, they're looking at guys like Braxton Myers and Warren Robertson as not just straight safeties, but potential boundary corners as well. And so he was blown away by their visit. I mean, he really was one of those kids that just didn't have a lot of words to describe everything and just the vibes and the campus. It's hard to really know, like, who USC's best competition is in this race. I think it's probably Oklahoma State. There's some other schools that are closer to home that are recruiting him. He does have an offer from Alabama, but I don't know that Alabama is really actively pursuing him right now. So I think USC's his lead school. I think that visit did a lot for him. It really put into, you know, the reality of going to the school. I think some of these guys, you know, they like the idea of playing at USC and oh yeah, Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart and, you know, all those guys that won championships before I was even born, you know, but there's a difference between that sort of idea and then seeing yourself actually going to USC as a school. And I think that's what this visit did. It actually transitioned them from, oh, that's, you know, I like the idea of, you know, visiting Los Angeles and seeing USC to now envisioning themselves actually playing for the Trojans. And I think he's one of those guys. So he definitely grows into that group of lead pack along with Trey Wilson. I think Micah,
and I just wanted to add quickly that Greg Biggins actually put in a crystal ball for Warren, just a little crystal ball stock market here for Warren Robinson does now have a crystal ball for USC. So just kind of further backing up what we're saying here.
Yeah. So, and I think offensive lineman from Washington, from Burien, Washington, Micah Benuelos, I think, is another guy that you have to put in the lead pack for USC. We talked about this earlier. I think it's Oregon and USC right now. He's taking his official visit to Oregon this weekend. So we'll see. Maybe Oregon's able to undo everything USC did. I think that's one that USC definitely is a top two for. So when we say lead pack, that's kind of what we're looking at, guys that they have to close with. And so it's them versus Oregon, and we'll see how that shakes out. I don't think it's a done deal yet, but there's definitely some feeling like USC, they gave themselves a good maybe margin going into that. Like, they have built themselves a lead, but it's not a lead that Oregon can't overcome. I guess that's the best way to describe it. Marquise Steele was a guy that we also sort of were like, could be a lead pack guy, but we're not really sure. He's going to take that official visit to Arkansas next weekend. He's got family in Arkansas. They are talking about him playing defensive line. USC is talking about him playing defensive line, though, too. And that's his first love. So he wants to play defensive line. And, you know, even though his relationship really out of the gates was more with Josh Henson, and that sort of indicated that he was looked at as an offensive lineman, after this past weekend, it's more defensive line. So that was more the talk, more exclusive defensive line. That's what he wants to play. He'll be probably interior defensive lineman. And I think USC is among the leaders for him for sure. They might be the leader for him, but it's going to be a question mark as to kind of when he wants to decide, because he's kind of said both things. He said that, you know, he wants to make a decision before senior year, but then he's taken some unofficial visits to places like Auburn and Georgia, and they could turn into official visits during the season as well. Yeah. So he's one of those guys that maybe he makes a commitment and then it's like, but I'm still taking my visits. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. And finally, of that group, of the rest was Micah Tease, the athlete from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Booker T, Washington, same high school as Gentry Williams, who Dante Williams recruited last year. And they were real close to potentially landing Gentry Williams. And then that kind of unraveled as Lincoln Riley got involved in that recruitment, and Oklahoma really signed up, sort of put on the full court press on Gentry Williams. We'll see what happens with Micah Tease. I don't think OU is actually in that lead pack for him right now. From what I understand, sources kind of indicate that he's looking at some other schools. Notre Dame's in there. A&M is in there, and A&M has not been talked about a whole lot, but I've had a couple sources say that he likes Texas A&M mainly because Texas A&M is recruiting him as a wide receiver. And like Marquis Steele, he has a favorite position. And even though he's looked at as an athlete by some schools, He wants to play on the offensive side of the ball, just like Marquise Deal wants to play on the defensive side of the ball. USC is recruiting him as a cornerback. So it's kind of interesting. You've got, you know, Braxton Myers there. You've got Warren Robertson there. And you've got Mike Ateese. We're all sort of kind of the similar size, similar build. And USC's mainly been recruiting him as a defensive back, and even though he wants to play wide receiver. So that could be a bit of a sticking point for him as we go on. And he's, you know, entertaining some of these other schools. And we'll see if he takes that official visit to A&M. I don't know if he has taken that visit yet, but that's a school that, you know, evidently came up that is a potential dark horse for him.
And did we go over Braylon Shelby?
No, because that's who you talked to.
Oh, that's – yes. I look, you were going, and I thought you maybe skipped him. But, yes, I did talk to the Texas edge rusher, Braylon Shelby, who just picked up a Texas A&M offer, so a little bit of a boost to his stock. He was one of those guys who was just blown away by the visit. He said he had never really experienced anything like USC had offered him on that trip, and he loved – going to Lincoln Riley's house for that luau. He loved hanging out with all the guys. Zachariah Branch and Malachi Nelson were kind of the two guys he was hanging out with for most of the weekend. He was hosted by Malcolm Epps, the former Texas Longhorn transfer at tight end. And the feeling is that, you know, we've kind of talked about is that this one is actually going to come down to Texas and USC. I believe USC has moved to the top of his list, as he has said as much, that they're up there at the top. I would venture to say that they are his favorite. I almost put a crystal ball in, but I kind of held off a little bit on that. And he does take his final official visit this weekend to the Longhorns. He saved the home state visit for last. So, and then he said he probably will make a commitment in July. Kind of like Tackett Curtis is expected to make a commitment in July as well. So after this weekend, it's going to be a little bit clearer where his heart lies. But he said distance will not be a factor for him. He wants to go wherever he feels comfortable, and he feels very comfortable at USC. He loves the West Coast. The only thing he said, the bad thing is the gas prices, which, you know, I can't blame him, Gerard. I simply can't.
Yeah, gas prices are horrible, but I doubt he's going to be driving around a whole lot himself these days. Seems like it's more Uber for anybody. And when you're on campus at USC, the great thing about USC is the campus is not that big and it's pretty insular, so you can kind of get everything done. You can go to Trader Joe's, which is right there in University Village. Target, come on, man.
It's all there.
We need some new sponsors. But so, you know, talking about that, we have really the only two guys that are left in that rest group are Edric Hill, the 6'3", 290-pound defensive tackle, four-star from Kansas City, Missouri, not Kansas City, Kansas, and David Peavy, who we have an update coming. We promise it's coming. Greg Biggins has an update with him. That's between really USC and Oregon, and we haven't seen any crystal balls. Greg's talked to him. We'll see how that shakes out, but I think it's fair to say that coming away from the visit, if we were to regroup these visitors, I would say Trey Wilson, Warren Robertson, Braylon Shelby, Micah Benuelos, Marquis Steele would be in that sort of lead packet, and even David Peavy, because it sounds like it's going to probably be Oregon and USC. So if we're talking about these are the group of the players that USC had to get to a point where they are trying to close with these guys. They did it with all those guys. You know, they're in the top two, I think, with every one of those players right now.
Absolutely. And that's a very stacked lead pack. And USC handled their business on this visit. And, you know, everyone we talked to, the reviews were out of this world for most of the kids and, well, I guess all the kids. So I think USC came correct. There was no golf cart issues, Gerard. We were not needed to fake repair any golf carts. So everything went smoothly, despite the number of kids that were on campus. I talked to Braylon about this, and I asked him, like, you had 20-plus kids on campus. Everyone has this tight schedule. How did the staff sort of handle, you know, bouncing around back and forth? Did everyone feel like they got enough time? And he was like, yeah, the staff was fantastic. They they were constantly coming around, checking in, getting one-on-one time. You know, they would do it like in between, you know, if they were leaving the hotel to in the Sprinter vans or whatever, they would sit down with kids and talk to them. So they were using every opportunity they could to get in one-on-one times, and which is essentially what you need to do when you have close to two dozen guys walking around on campus.
I'm sure they learned a lot from this weekend too, mm-hmm. you know, for future weekends and sort of how they want to do things and organize things. I mean, this was the first time they've done this at USC.
Yeah.
And I know they've done it similar things at Oklahoma before, and much of the support staff that organized and were involved with this, and, you know, a lot of credit has to go to them, Annie Hansen and her staff, and trying to get all these ducks in a row. But it's still USC, still different school, still different city, right? You know, getting around Norman is a lot different than getting around downtown Los Angeles. So there's probably a lot of lessons learned from this weekend and going forward, and how they want to do things. And, you know, if they want to have as many recruits, if they want to have less recruits. I think coming away from this weekend, one of the big things we wanted to know, like, okay, there's the argument for or against a big visit weekend like this. You've got, you know, two dozen recruits on campus, including commits that have already committed. Is it better to have, you know, 6 to 8 guys on campus that you can spend more one-on-one time with? Or do you get more on having more guys and you have more momentum built and you're able to have these sort of positional recruitments going on, where guys that are committed along with guys that are on the fence, along with guys who are maybe a little bit on the outside looking in for, all getting together, having photo shoots? You know, we're still going to see this. Now, the verdict is not in. You know, we have to actually see the commitments before we can get to a point and say, well, yes, this was a smashing success. I we can't really say that yet. I mean, it seems that way. Like, I would go on a limb present day right now, and I would say reasonably, realistically, USC could get 10 commitments from guys that were not committed from this weekend.
Whoa.
Yeah, I could say they could get 10 guys committed. We went through the list beforehand, Chris, you and I, when we were talking about sort of that 50% ratio of, you know, roughly 50% of the guys that are uncommitted to get them committed. If you get, you know, 50% of the commits, that's a successful weekend by anybody's, you know, standard. And certainly when you've got two dozen recruits on campus, but that's obviously being supplemented by the guys that are already committed as well. But you've got that many guys on campus. Yeah, half getting committed would be, you know, huge. So I could see that reasonably arguing that they could get 10 guys from this weekend committed for sure. And they're aiming for more. But if it happens or not, we cannot say. I mean, this is to be determined. And that's ultimately going to be what judges whether this was good or bad. You know, it's how many commitments they actually get from the weekend. If they miss on certain guys, what have you, of course, you know, the naysayer is going to say, that's why you bring a guy in when you only have 3 or 4 other guys with him, so you're actually able to spend more time with him and make sure that all the questions are answered and you get every bit of face time with him as possible.
Before we move on to our break, because we've been talking a lot here, I just wanted to throw out one thing that I didn't get to touch on with Francis Mauioga when we were talking about him, and this Lincoln Riley luau that he hosted at his Palos Verdes compound mansion or whatever. It was sort of a Polynesian luau theme, obviously. Do you think that had anything to do with the fact that Francis was on campus and he being the, as I've argued, the number one prospect on their board? Do you think that went into it at all?
I mean, to some extent, I'm sure, you know, there was definitely, it wasn't just Francis, you know, on campus who's Polynesian either. You know, it's
yes.
Teo Ngulele,
Alani Noah.
Yeah, they've got a few guys there, Alani Noah, et cetera. So, yeah, that there's something to be said for that. And, you know, that's a scene, you know, that's an event that you can have. I mean, they could have had mariachis there. And they're going to have a whole Mexican taco weekend type of
thing. Oh, then we really could have gotten on there. Screw the mechanics. We could have been in there, Gerard. We could have been in there.
And you know, I mean, in future events, maybe that's that plays even better. You know, maybe, you know, that's like, hey, you know, I'm Polynesian. I've seen this before. You know, you don't know how that's going to play. You try to project and you try to kind of like angle it and figure it out. Okay, you know, maybe this is something that, you know, reminds them of home, and they see that, you know, culturally there's a lot of people in Southern California that are Polynesian, and it's a lot different than it is maybe in places in the South in terms of being around people that are like you or what have you. But we've seen guys like Tui Tagovailoa, you know, go elsewhere, and Manti Te'o, you know, rowing his own canoe to Notre Dame. It works sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't. So it's really a bit of a coin flip. I don't know that was, you know, the entirety of why you would have a luau. I think it would be almost insulting if it was like that's what it was all about. I mean, obviously there's other kids there that are African American and white kids that, you know, don't have anything to do with that. So you want to have it because it's a event, it's fun, it's something that brings people together. And I think culturally, from a standpoint, it is an event that is about family and people. And so I think it works really well with that weekend. I think theme-wise, it works really well to bring people together under one umbrella, if you will. But, you know, you could, again, there's other cultural things that you could do that you could take from other cultures that would do the same thing. I mean, again, you could have, you know, like a mariachi sort of thing. And I mean, we know the Mexican food in Los Angeles is amazing, right? So it's like, you know, I'm sure in Oklahoma, you're going to have like a big barbecue type of thing, right? You're going to have the barbecues in Alabama and all these places. That's become very popular. You know, barbecue in Los Angeles is for the most part mediocre, right? You got to go really search for decent barbecue in California. You don't have to search for decent Mexican food in Southern California. One of the best Mexican food places I have here out in IE is in the 76 station, the gas station here, just down the street. They've got amazing burritos and tacos. It's fantastic. So, you know, you've got a lot of options there. And that might be just like a different take and really interesting in the future because, again, I mean, none of those kids are really Mexican. I don't know how many really good meals they have that are Mexican meals. It might be totally different for them. But then you take that risk also. Maybe they don't like it because it's the stuff that they're not used to as well. So this is all stuff that I'm sure goes on in Annie Hansen's head and Lincoln Riley's head. And when they're sitting in these recruiting meetings trying to figure out, you know, what do we feed the kids? Where do we go? Hey, they went to is it Nubu?
I'm not sure.
I've never been there before.
Nobu.
Yeah, in Malibu. You know, I'm not in that tax bracket to go there. You know, and that's like sushi. And that's a little bit of a, you know, you got to make sure people are okay with sushi and that they're not allergic to shellfish and all this other kind of stuff. You know, it's great. The scene's great. The ambiance is great. But you do have to dot your I's and cross your T's when it comes to feeding people, because, you know, they could be like,
well, I feel bad about those linemen because those portions are so small. So I've seen for no.
There's a lot of portions, though. I don't know. It seemed like the portions are small, but there are a lot of portions from what I could see from Dave Ungalade's IG account. Dave was like the man on the scene with IG, and he was taking video of just everything. That's Mateo's dad. And so, yeah, I mean, it looked like that they had plenty to eat there. I don't think that they starved on that one. But, yeah, it's one of those things where you kind of have to know how that's going to play, you know, and how it conveys and the type of food that's going to be there. And there's got to be options. You know, it's like, hey, listen, you know, some people just like meat and potatoes. And so you got to have meat and potatoes there, even though it's, you know, maybe a more exotic type of food that you're serving.
Look, all I know is I had some parents give rave reviews about that that roasted pig that they had there. So I think they were okay. And if that that Mexican gas station place you like, ask them if they're interested in sponsoring a hot new USC recruiting podcast with a couple of devastatingly handsome Latino guys, you know.
There you go. You know how to sell it.
I know how to sell it. And with that, we're going to take our break for this podcast. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the last batch of visitors for this week, a little bit of a stay doubted and NIL, and then some USC wide receiver recruiting board updates. And then we'll end with some questions. How about that, Gerard?
Devastating.
Devastating. And we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hurricane, how was that break?
Ni hao.
Okay. All right, I need to flush
that. Having two stars could be a lot better than having one.
Okay, so let's move on to obviously a crazy weekend last week with nearly 500 visitors, what have you. Actually, what do you think the total number was, including parents and everyone? Would you say? Would you say 150? No, that's too much. I'm bad at math.
That's too much. Idea.
I just thought you would take a guess.
Because now you can bring two people with you, and so that, you know.
Well, the Walker Lion clan was like nine deep. So, yeah. So, well, I would say close to 75. I don't know. I'm not going to spend time on this. I thought it would be a more obvious answer. But this week after a billion people were on campus, a much quieter weekend with just a couple of visitors, one being on campus right now, that being a three-star offensive center prospect out of Washington, Landon Hatchett. He was a target for Lincoln Riley when he was at Oklahoma, and he was a target for Josh Henson when he was at Texas A&M. So that Venn diagram of recruitment lands him here at USC. They offered him during a spring unofficial visit. Him and his family came down, got him back on campus for an official visit this weekend. Interesting prospect. You know, this is a guy I definitely could see in the class, him being a guy who was recruited by both Riley and Henson at the respective schools. So we'll probably have an update through Brandon Huffman in a couple days here, wrapping up his visit. But another big lineman on campus.
Yeah, and you look at him and you look at Micah Benuelos and you see, okay, it's probably either or. You know, you're probably not taking both of those guys. They both look like center prospects. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see because Benuelos is up at Oregon this weekend and Hatchett is at USC. And it sounds like it's maybe going to come down to Washington and USC for Hatchett. And so we're just going to have to see how that shakes out here. You know, USC's got their chance now. And I believe he already officially visited Washington. And so this is kind of, you know, his last visit. And, it might be just a matter of, you know, who wants to commit first.
Right. Who's going to beat it to the punch? Either of those guys, you know, USC does need some more center prospects. You have Brett Nealon, who is expected, this is his last season, and then Justin Dietich, who's up there as a redshirt junior, probably could shift into the center spot going into next season if he sticks around. And then Andrew Milik, who was recruited as an offensive tackle, has been the third string center. So I think they need more specialized center guys. And that's what you kind of have here with Hatchett, who is a center prospect in the rankings. And then Buenelos, who, you know, has that mold. So I think those are, it's important to get sort of a center for this group. And then the other visitor who is expected to be on this campus this weekend, not on campus right now, like Landon is the three-star Chaminade linebacker Isaiah Chisholm, who is coming off his Oregon visit, and he's going to wrap things up. I believe this will be his final official visit of the weekend or of the month, sorry, and he will make a commitment in July or possibly August. So a very a much slower official visitor weekend this week, Gerard.
Of the visitors that we know of. I mean,
that we know of, yes, we must say that we know of.
a few others actually. To interject, just to correct myself here for Landon Hatchett, he actually has Washington this weekend. So he's taking this midweek visit to USC, and it's Washington. For some reason, I thought it was Michigan that was next weekend, but it's Washington is his final official visit. So Washington is said to be the leader. He's already visited Michigan, already visited Oregon, already visited Texas A&M, and now he's at USC right now, and then he's going to finish it up with Washington. So going to be interesting to see how that goes down with Hatchett and Banuelos, who kind of look like they're basically vying for the same spot being recruited by USC. And with Chisholm, yep, he's not really been recruited much outside the Pac-12. He's really a Pac-12 guy. Was looking at Oregon State. That were kind of his leader when USC offered a scholarship. And I think with USC, it's just kind of a feeling around sort of with Tackett Curtis, obviously. They know that he's going to be at Ohio State, I think this weekend. And Ohio State's obviously a big-time player for him. We felt like Ohio State was the leader going into his official visit at USC. We haven't really heard much from, I believe it's his Wisconsin visit this past weekend. Correct, Chris?
He did not take a visit this weekend.
He didn't take a visit. Okay.
He took Wisconsin going into the week before USC. USC was off weekend this, and then he was going to finish with Ohio State this weekend.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So I think, you know, that's USC sort of, you got to make sure you have some options here. You know, you don't know what's going to happen with Tackett Curtis. And, you know, Isaiah Chisholm is another one of those kind of a little smaller, not a big 6'3", 235 pound linebacker. He's a little smaller, but a little quicker type of linebacker. And, you know, getting him on campus, I think, is just one of those things where you just got to have some good options and make sure that, you know, you don't put all your eggs into one basket. I think that's what that's about. And potentially they could have some more official visitors. We know that, and I don't want to skip ahead too much, but, you know, we know Brandon Enos is committed to Ohio State. And so, you know, USC is going to continue to look at that wide receiver position, evaluate that. A new scholarship offer just went out to Gainesville, three-star wide receiver Jaron Hamilton of the 2023 class. Hamilton's kind of blown up here in the past couple months where, you know, he's got offers from Alabama, gotten offers from Michigan. He's got a few schools that are on him. And so maybe USC tries to make a kind of last-minute pitch to try to get him on campus this weekend. You do have one more week in July, very late July, where potentially you could bring in visitors. And I know there's a couple guys that have official visits that are scheduled for that last week of July, which is a tough week to come in for an official visit, only because sometimes you're already in camp for your high school football teams. So, you know, it depends, I guess, on the state and sort of if you have time off. Some, you know, states require you to have like a week off or something. But I don't know if that comes in July. That usually comes a little later in August. But we'll see if that, you know, if USC has something. They've had something the past few years outside of obviously the COVID shutdown where they had like a small barbecue event. And it was really just like a dozen players, 15 players that they brought down just to hang out and to basically take an unofficial visit at USC. So we'll see if, you know, then maybe there's a week there they try to use for official visits. Or like I said, they try to squeeze some guys in here last minute. They're going to have a few camps going on this weekend. So I don't know if they're going to have like a lot of time to have a bunch of visitors. We saw during that June 10th weekend, they did have the elite camp on a Saturday. So the coaches were sort of scrambling back and forth. You've got Tackett Curtis and Grant Buckey and Tobias Raymond all in town while you're actually having a camp at the same time. So that was one of those things where I don't know how much the coaches appreciated that. Maybe it went off fine. It wasn't a big deal. But it's one of those things where, you know, you definitely got to juggle different events going on. And of course, obviously this past weekend with no events going on, they were juggling a lot too. So it's just a very busy month for the coaching staff and the football staff at USC.
Yeah. I could not imagine trying to have camps last weekend. That would have been suicide. Absolutely. And you said you didn't want to skip too much, but you literally jumped the topic, Gerard. But you put on here, we wanted to talk about Stay Doubted and the Boulevard, USC's new NIL initiative. We didn't have time to talk about it last week. I believe it was announced while we were going into recording, and we were like, we're ill prepared to kind of talk about this. But this was something you wanted to touch on for this week's show.
Yeah, it was just something that I thought we would acknowledge and mention. It is a facet within the recruiting process for USC to some extent. We still don't know exactly how it pertains to recruits. I mean, we know how it pertains to current players, but how it actually pertains to recruits is still a bit vague, only because this is not a collective. USC has stated flat out that it's not a collective. It's really more of a marketing company and an agency, which has a subsidiary, which is now called Boulevard, which Boulevard itself was its, I believe, its own company. I thought at first that Boulevard was just a wing of the university that they were using to educate and try to promote athletes and their brands. And
so is Boulevard no longer a thing? The original
Boulevard is still a thing, but I don't know the financials of it. I don't know if it was bought by Stay Doubted, but it's now a subsidiary of Stay Doubted. So it's basically a part of Stay Doubted. So Stay Doubted is the, you know, the marketing company. They create digital content, so on and so forth. Boulevard is just a USC sort of branch of that. Now, you know, there's obviously a big difference between that and the collective being run by donors. You know, they're run by boosters. And so it's basically the money is running whatever shell company or whatever the collective is called. And they are in direct contact with either players or recruits, which, you know, the legality of that, again, has been questioned, whether that's really, you know, how the NCAA has written it out. And there's even been some statements to say that, you know, the NCAA does not want boosters and donors dealing with recruits or paying recruits. That's inducement, and you can't do that. So there's a lot of sort of cloudy, vague written language there. But with the Stay Doubted Boulevard brand, this is not being run by donors. Instead, they are giving a platform to buy merchandise, and that money then goes to the athletes. So there's a gap there. You know, there's definitely a big gap there, and there's a lot of questions as to NIL arrangements and how that deals with recruits as opposed to current players. Because, you know, who knows who gets how much money and how important who is who, when technically the coaching staff is not supposed to be able to talk about recruiting with non-USC employees. Legally, you can't just call up Stay Doubted or Boulevard when they are not a part of the university and say, hey, here's our top guy. This is who we like the best. This guy, pay him more than this guy or whatever, because that's just the down and dirty of it when it comes to NIL and the payment of recruits. And, you know, with the collectives, again, the NCAA doesn't like the collectives, and they don't like that. And I think this is why USC is staying away from that that label, because you're talking about people that want kids to go to a specific school for money. Okay, that's just it. You know, Stay Doubted is a company that has a lot of different partnerships with a lot of different companies. There's no just like single connection to USC. Stay Doubted does not exist because of USC, but collectives only exist because of that university and that university's agenda and motives. So, you know, the people within that collective that are pulling that money together for whether it be a current player to stay at that school or to get a transfer, or it's an actual recruit out of high school, if state laws allow it, that money is going to be there to induce that player to go to that specific school. They're not pulling that money to say, hey, we just have a bunch of money for you and we think you're a great player and we want to endorse you to do this thing. And there's no sort of, but you got to go to this school, right? I mean, that's the whole part of it with the collective. So that's what USC is staying away from. Stay Doubted is, like I said, a company that in itself doesn't have any actual affiliation with USC. It has a deal with USC basically to represent and to, I guess, use its logos and what have you, and to be a platform to sell merchandise that boosters and fans can buy, and then that money goes to whatever. I again, the back end of that, I don't know exactly how that goes. We have to try to investigate more as to, you know, how you buy a bunch of merchandise. Well, how do you know where that money goes? And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of questions there with that. And so it's not a collective. It's just not a collective. But it is something. And, you know, USC's, I think, you're doing a good job trying to work within the lines. You know, we heard about the NCAA starting to do some investigating with Miami. There's some other schools that are on the docket that are getting investigated for their collectives. And you see all these schools scrambling to make state laws to say that, you know, it's okay for them to talk to the players about these NIL deals. And, it's all sort of retroactively, because they know that if they get pinched by the NCAA, they're going to try to hide behind the state. And then they're going to have the state try to sue the NCAA for, whatever. I don't know what the grounds would be for that. But that's what it seems like it's what's happening right now. And I mean, it might just disintegrate college football as we know it. But, you know, that's another podcast for another time.
Can I confess something to you?
You can confess something to me as long as it has nothing to do with the Crabs in Texas Tech.
Sure, sure.
Or not Texas Tech. Excuse me, Trevino Tech. I apologize, Texas Tech fans.
If you're going to take over my program, you need to know the name of the school that you're representing, Gerard. But my confession is, I don't love the name Stay Doubted. I'm just going to put that out there. I've sat on it for about a week now, and I just need to come out and say it. I don't like the name Stay Doubted.
I agree with you. It doesn't. I've thought about it too. I go, you know, I didn't like it initially. I go, well, let me just, you know, whatever. It's not ringy. It doesn't. It's kind of questionable. It's like, what? What do you mean? Like, what does that mean? You know, you kind of would like it to be a little more piffy. And a little more direct. And again, Boulevard and that whole thing that seemed to be created by USC, but it wasn't. It seems like that was a company on it itself, and now that company has been maybe bought over. I don't want to speak out of class because I'm not 100% sure, but that's the state of the game when it comes to USC and NIL. And I mean, they're doing a good job. They've been proactive with the marketing standpoint of things, but. Again, USC seems to be playing more on the proven commodities, right? The kids and the players that have proven themselves one way or the other that actual legitimate corporations and services want to use to promote their goods. Whereas these other schools, a lot of these other schools, are just using boosters to pull money together to go after whoever they want and whoever they like and say, hey, we need this guy to go win a championship. There's a difference there. There's a big difference there. And again, the NCAA is talking like one is legal and one is not, but what teeth they have to enforce it remains to be seen.
Remains to be seen, but it will be seen. I suspect in the coming months and years as this continues to shake out. Gerard, are you ready to do some listener questions?
I am ready.
Okay, then. This one comes from before I do that, I just want to remind you that you can send us. I always do this after I've done questions, but I need to do it before. I just want to remind you that you can send us a question and we'll answer it on the show. You can email us at podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you put the composite, the 2-star recruits, Hurricane, 10K, those Latino guys, whatever you want. Just address it in a way that we know it's for us. And we will get it added to our show. You can also DM me a question, if you will. My DMs are open, and people submit there probably more frequently are through the DM. So, again, that's podcast@uspeople.com, or you can DM me at Chris N. Trevino. Gerard just isn't on Twitter, so don't even bother. So let's jump into this. Hey, Chris, with you and Hurricane crushing it with your composite 2-star recruits podcast these last few months, would either of you have a hunch or intel speculation if American Heritage wide receiver Brandon Innes makes an official visit to USC during the upcoming season? Also, any chance Lamar High School offensive lineman Isaiah Robinson takes an official visit to USC with the Trojans making his top 12? Keep up the excellent work, and I look forward to your next podcast. Thank you, Corey. So we kind of touched on Brandon Innes a little bit earlier with the show, but he did, in fact, pop on a commitment to Ohio State, which is, you know, something we sort of talked about earlier in podcast here, that that is certainly a possibility and that it seemed to be he was trending towards the Buckeyes. And it'd be really good for USC if he didn't make an official a commitment off that official visit this past weekend. But lo and behold, that has been the case. He has stated multiple times before that that he was going to take his USC official visit in season. And he also said that he had said, you know, a couple times when the recorder wasn't recording that he didn't plan on committing until signing day or, you know, at the end of the season, which, you know, obviously that's not the case. And I don't think we ever we didn't really think that would be the case, especially if a guy of his ranking and stature, it seemed like a guy who was going to commit earlier rather than later. So USC, you know, I don't think this is a devastating blow to USC, obviously, just because I think they're going to be fine when it comes to recruiting skilled players and pass catchers specifically. You know, we did mention that they put out a new 2023 offer, Jaron Hamilton out of Florida, who's been blowing up. So just doing a little reshuffling of the wide receiver board, seems like they do want at least one more wide receiver. But I think they're going to be okay with the guys they're going to bring in this season, regardless if that includes Innis or not. And there's a chance, you know, if USC is winning a bunch of games, that they can get him on campus for an official visit, and that still happens.
I think USC definitely can get back into it here if they want to, if they choose to, with a good season. I think that there's a potential for them to have him on an unofficial visit. It's not out of the question. But again, at that point, it's, you know, who else is on the docket? Who else are you recruiting? Who else do you like? You know, I think that a bigger receiver to go along with Mekhi Lemon and Zach Branch would be nice. A little diversity there, you know, get a guy that's got a little more height maybe. There's nobody that's really like, you know, that jumps off the target list right now that they have a good shot at recruiting that's that guy. But nevertheless, you never know. I mean, receiver position, guys can develop. And certainly, I mean, you talk about Jaron Hamilton. I mean, that's a guy that's a three-star that's come out of nowhere, and he's got offers from USC and Alabama here in the last few weeks, like last 2 weeks, literally. So, yeah, there's always guys that can come out of the woodwork. You're feeling pretty good because you've got Zach Branch and you've already got Mekhi Lemon. I think there's definitely a third guy out there for them. DeAndre Moore is another guy that's going to be local. He's going to be able to come to games. And you start throwing up a bunch of numbers and you have this great offense and you're winning and you're competing for potentially a spot in the college football playoff next year. And I don't know, you know, again, always talk about like sort of what's the point of their success, that it can pull in guys, you know, that maybe that were harder pulls before and what's the expectation. I still think 8 wins is the expectation. I've talked to, I don't know, probably like 7 or 8 guys at this point that are looking at USC. Some are committed, some are not committed. And I think 8 wins tends to be the sort of expectation, because it always comes out, I think they can go to the college football playoff. Like a lot of the commits, even Braxton Myers, it's talked about this in his story, says, I think they can get to the college football playoff. And I'm like, well, what they can do, what you think they can do as opposed to what you expect is different. And I think that has to be true of the fan base as well. You have to come to terms with what your actual expectations are and then what the potential of the team is, because those are two different things. So I think for most recruits, they feel like 8 wins is like, all right, cool. I think they keep most of their commits that they get over the summer with 8 wins. You dip below that, and then maybe you start to lose guys. I think if you get above that, you probably have to get to around 10 wins, Rose Bowl, and then maybe you're able to go grab, you know, DeAndre Moore away from Adidas. I mean, Louisville. And so, I mean, that's kind of what you're looking for building during the season on the field, because that's a huge recruit tool. That's a big deal. Everybody sort of wants to forget about that in the offseason, and we all get wrapped up with the golden hour and everything about an official visit. But then the season comes and it's like, holy crap, it just changed the game for so many teams and so many schools and so many recruits. And now you got this coach is on the hot seat that wasn't on the hot seat before the season. This coach might be going to the NFL. There's all this stuff that changes. And so again, we talk about with some of these guys, it's just about staying within striking distance, you know, having that traction, staying around, having a good season, producing results on the field. And then you've got that stability with the coaching staff. You might be able to cap the recruiting class off with some guys that, you know, at this point or in August, July, we're thinking, you know, USC's on the outs for.
And in terms of Isaiah Robinson, that's a guy we've mentioned on this podcast before. USC made his top 12 earlier in the spring, maybe last month, I believe. He's been sort of more low key. He's only taken two official visits this month, that being to Cal. And then this past weekend, he went to Baylor. The feeling is that the Bears are his leader at the moment. But he is definitely a guy I could see taking a visit at some point, probably more so in the season. I guess it's possible they could get him on campus, sneak him on campus, say this weekend. But I don't think there's any sort of he's not on the radar to take a visit anytime soon, but he could. It seems like he's going to wrap up those three remaining officials in the fall.
Yeah, a bit of an enigma this offseason because he's spoken very highly of USC in the past, and he took that unofficial visit when USC was down and they weren't playing very well last season, but talked a lot about LA and how he enjoyed LA. And so he was a guy that was on our radar, and it seemed like USC and Texas were kind of his top two schools, but we just really haven't heard a lot from him or about him when it comes to USC. So USC is in the top 12. He's taken his official visits to Baylor, which is this past weekend. He went to Cal as well. But, you know, you still have Miami and Texas and USC there that are still recruiting there. So we'll see if he's one of those guys that wants to pop and, you know, make his decision before the school year. A lot of those guys just feel pressure, you know, to do that. They don't just feel pressure from college coaches that, you know, feel like they have a chance at landing him, but they feel pressure from their high school coaches too, because, you know, high school coaches don't want you going on official visits and taking red eyes and doing all this stuff during the season. They want you to focus on your high school year so they can go win a state championship. So that comes into play as well. I think with USC, it'll be interesting to see how many visitors they bring in during the season, just because it's going to take some time to build up the excitement with the football program. You know, it's just not going to be like it is in the South or in Texas or one of these places where it's like, oh, Lincoln Riley, and you're going to have sellout crowds immediately. You've got to prove it at USC. You know, you've got to prove it. Pete Carroll had to prove it. Every coach that's come through, you have to sell the product on the field to the fans. And Los Angeles is full of passive sports fans that just want to see a winner, that just want to see exciting ball play. And whether it's basketball or it's football or it's baseball, if you have that and you put it on the field, they will come. It's a sort of, you know, if you build it, they will come. And so that's maybe not going to be for the Stanford game. Maybe that's not going to be for the first few games that you have. But by mid-season to the end of the season, if you're rolling and you're undefeated, then, yeah, for sure, you're going to start to see the Coliseum field. You're going to have that environment, that atmosphere that you can compare with other schools in these other regions. And then you start to, I think, become a little more open to the idea of bringing in recruits that are visiting officially.
Our next question comes from Ben in La Crescenta. Congratulations to the USC 4x100 track team for winning the NCAA championship. Are Nicholas Harbor, Roderick Pleasant, Zachariah Branch, and Domani Jackson going to be the next 4x100 NCAA champions?
Probably not.
Okay. But let's just say all those guys sign with USC and they're going to be both, whatever, football and track. Do you think that's a national championship 4x100?
I mean, that's a good question. I just don't follow track enough to know where the top teams are and who those guys individually are and what kind of times they're running and what kind of times they're running out of high school. I don't think Zach Branch is going to run track at USC. I think that he wants to really focus on football. And I question whether Domani is going to as well. Obviously he didn't because he had the injury this past spring, but I don't know going forward that he's necessarily going to run track. I mean, he talked about it coming out of high school, but you know, once you get into to football and you get into that mode of like, all right, it's such a sacrifice and there's so much that's involved in it to be a good football player. And first and foremost, that's what your mindset is. You know, it's kind of tough all of a sudden to transition to start running track. For a guy like Roger Pleasant, that's a different deal. And for Nick Harbor, that's a different deal. Those guys, for sure, if they go to college and they play football, for sure they're going to run track. But for some of the other guys, it's a little more like they're doing it because they're good at the high school level and they've got some good times. But once they get into that football mode, it's kind of like it's different than high school, man. It's all year round.
And our final question, it's actually a two-part question, comes from my guy Giovanni. The first one, let's get that one out of the way. How many commitments will USC get before the season starts? So they're at 11 now. I will say by the time September 3rd kickoff, I will say they have 17 recruits, 17 commits. So six more. That's probably way too high.
Looking at who's going to potentially commit before the start of the season, you have quite a few guys there. I mean, the guys that were officially visiting this past weekend, you know, a majority of those guys are talking about making decisions before the start of the season. So, you know, I said USC could get potentially 10 commits from just this past weekend. Looking at a majority of those guys probably committing before the end of summer. So that would put you at 21. So I would say, you know, I think it's definitely going to be more than 17. I think USC shooting for more than probably 18, bringing all those guys in when they did. Unless some guys back out there and it gets to be August and they're like, ah, I'm just not sure yet. I mean, I'm going to say it's going to be around 20.
Okay. Okay. A little more optimistic than me. So I say 17. Hurricane says 20, so we'll see. September 3rd, I'll make a note, and we'll try to see who was better.
We'll try to
who was better.
Try to shame the person that was too optimistic, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Homer, you're a homer.
And then the final question, which is sort of plays into the question, which we haven't done in a while, so I'm going to do take this question as it's non-USC football recruiting related, so we'll make it that. If you were tasked with running another two-hour podcast, what subject would you talk about? I love this question.
Well, we would have to talk about a subject that we both have in common, I would think, right?
This is true. I interpreted it as individually. But... I mean, we could do individual answer and then what our common co-hosting one would be.
I mean, for me, it could be a lot of things. Like, I mean, you're just talking like hobby-wise. I mean, obviously, I play a lot of video games, so it would be about video games. Could be about guns. Very much into weaponry and guns. We could talk sniper rifles. We could talk the latest, the M5 rifle that the U.S. military is putting together, made by SIG, the MCX, I believe it's called Spear in the commercial market, but it's going to be designated as the M5.
He's already going off. He was ready to go 30 minutes
weird,
on this.
I have weird – I mean, I love philosophy, so I mean, I would – I don't really – I'm not an expert of any means on philosophy. So, I mean, I like to talk about it vis-a-vis, you know, with you know, different – you know, how it relates to different topics, you know, like psychology, consciousness, and et cetera. But I don't know enough to speak as some type of expert to have a 2-hour podcast on it too. So, I mean, it would probably be more like revolve around like video game stuff. What else? A 2-hour podcast. I know there's a few things. I mean, obviously I like music. So like metal, you know, and I could probably talk a lot about that a bit. I'm kind of a nerd. I'm a nerd for like certain things. Like there's some stuff that I'm way too like OCD, intricate, detailed. Like I don't know everything about it. And then there's other things that I just don't care about at all. And it's like, how do you not care about that? You know, so I'm a weirdo like that. So
music,
yeah,
you said?
I think video games we could both talk about to some extent, right? Like, you play enough. You're not, I wouldn't really call Chris a gamer. He's, but, you know, he's a console sort of plebe that, you know, plays some games here and there.
I've driven a Warthog in Halo.
Yeah. So
he was so disappointed in that. He was like, yes. Individually, I think I would probably do movies. I think I could talk a long time about movies. But I have a fun pitch for you for the joint one. If you're ready to hear me out.
Yeah, I'm ready to hear you out. I think it would
be a weird sort of like YouTube podcast where we go down like a YouTube rabbit hole and then like talk about it.
So YouTube rabbit hole, which rabbit hole do you mean? Because there's like a lot of that. You can go a lot.
Yeah, every show is a different rabbit hole.
So like, are we talking about like the Kennedy assassination, the moon landing?
It could be literally anything, Gerard. It's like, hey, it's Monday, Gerard. I stumbled upon this YouTube video about
Joe Biden's finding off a bike.
What? Sure, whatever.
Was it gravity, or was there a shooter in the grassy knoll?
It's just anything. It's whoever comes with an idea or like, hey, I found this. I've spent way too long on it. Let's talk about it. I think that would be the show I'm pitching.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. There's, I mean, people right now love talking about UFOs. And I mean, that's really sort of the funny thing is like Joe Rogan has such a popular podcast, but I mean, he gets in trouble because of politics and all this other stuff that comes up and, you know, talking about COVID and all this stuff. But truth of the matter is he built that podcast really talking about UFOs and weed. that's what people are over. I mean, that's what kind of his best episodes are about, like UFOs and like ancient civilizations and all kinds of weird stuff like that. And so there's lots of rabbit holes. Thing is, you got to read up on a lot of that kind of stuff, man. There's a lot to know, and you got to have the experts, and he brings in the experts. You and I sitting there talking about it, neither of us are paleontologists or excavators of ancient civilization, pottery.
You don't know that.
I do know that. So I mean, I don't know. Like, it would be us just asking ourselves a lot of questions and more questions.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that, Mr. Philosophy Guy. That's all philosophy is, asking questions and talking about it.
Yeah, but you have to have some type of thesis at some point, some type of resolution to what you think and why you think it. And if you don't really have any real facts and information that are supporting that, then why would anybody want to listen to that? They're just listening to you talk about, Sasquatch,
they like
and how this one time you heard something while you're in your tent when you were hiking, and it's like, well, okay, cool, whatever, dude. But like, where's the evidence that to support, your basis for thinking a certain way? You have to have some type of receipts, buddy. You got to have the receipts. We wouldn't have the receipts to necessarily go down a rabbit hole and have it mean anything.
Look, that was just my pitch. It's fine. It's fine. So the answers are video games, maybe guns, philosophy, whatever Gerard feels about talking about that day, movies for me, and then combined is maybe like a YouTube rabbit hole show. So there you go. There you have it. I hope that satisfied your question, Giovanni. And with that, that wraps up our show, Gerard. I don't know. You're probably not going to believe me, but this is the first sub 2 hour podcast we've had since week one. So that stuns me, to be honest.
So you're dragging your feet because you promised a 4 hour podcast.
I didn't promise nothing. I said the streets want a 4 hour podcast. I didn't say we're giving to them. I'm just saying what the streets wanted.
I think, the information that we have is sort of, out there, and it's just easy to kind of go over, what we've learned thus far. Obviously we did that, and I say we, that giant war room, which we call the War Room Special, which went on Monday night, and that was just like, you know, a mountain of information to just kind of, you know, where everything stands. And I think that sort of, you know, set the scene a little bit. So there's not a whole lot more to get into talking about that. So, yeah, I mean, let's not ramble on and make it longer just for the sake of making longer. If the information is more concise and we go for faster and we're able to get it out there, then, you know, so be it.
Okay, well, there you have it. Again, this is Composite Two-Star Recruits. I am Chris. That is Hurricane, a.k.a. Gerard Martinez. Thank you for joining us for this week's show, and we will catch you next time.
That leopard sucks!
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right!
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.